The Apple Tree by Jay Galsworthy. The Apple Tree, the Singing, and the Gold. Murray's Hippolytus of Euripides. On their silver wedding day, Ashurst and his wife were motoring along the outskirts of the moor, intending to crown the festival by stopping the night at Torquay, where they had first met. This was the idea of Stella Ashurst, whose character contained a streak of sentiment. If she had long lost the blue-eyed, flower-like charm, the cool, slim purity of face and form, the apple-blossom colouring, which had so swiftly and so oddly affected Ashurst 26 years ago, she was still, at 43, a comely and faithful companion, whose cheeks were faintly mottled, and whose grey-blue eyes had acquired a certain fullness. It was she who stopped the car, where the common rose steeply to the left, and a narrow strip of larch and beech, with here and there a pine, stretched out toward the valley, between the road and the first long high hill of the full moor. She was looking for a place where they might lunch, for Ashurst never looked for anything, and this, between the golden firs and the feathery green larches, smelling of lemons in the last sun of April, this was a view into the deep valley and up to the long moor heights, seemed fitting to the decisive nature of one who sketched in watercolours and loved romantic spots. Grasping her paint-box, she got out. "Won't this do, Frank?" Ashurst, rather like a bearded Schiller, grey in the wings, tall, long-legged, with large, remote grey eyes which sometimes filled with meaning and became almost beautiful, with nose a little to one side and bearded lips just open, Ashurst, 48, and silent, grasped the luncheon basket and got out too. "Oh, look, Frank, a grave!" By the side of the road, where the track from the top of the common crossed it at right angles and ran through a gate past the narrow wood, was a thin mound of turf, 6 feet by 1, with a moorstone to the west, and on it someone had thrown a blackthorn spray and a handful of bluebells. Ashurst looked, and the poet in him moved. At crossroads, a suicide's grave. Poor mortals with their superstitions. Whoever lay there, though, had the best of it. No clammy sepulchre, among other hideous graves carved with futilities. Just a rough stone, the wide sky, and wayside blessings. And without comment, for he had learned not to be a philosopher in the bosom of his family, he strode away up onto the common, dropped the luncheon basket under a wall, spread a rug for his wife to sit on. She would turn up from her sketching when she was hungry, and took from his pocket Murray's translation of the Hippolytus. He had soon finished reading of The Cyprian and Her Revenge, and looked at the sky instead. And watching the white clouds so bright against the intense blue, Ashurst, on his silver wedding day, longed for he knew not what. Maladjusted to life, man's organism. One's mode of life might be high and scrupulous, but there was always an undercurrent of greediness, a hankering and sense of waste. Did women have it too? Who could tell? And yet, men who gave vent to their appetites for novelty, their riotous longings for new adventures, new risks, new pleasures, these suffered no doubt from the reverse side of starvation, from surfeit. No getting out of it. A maladjusted animal, civilized man. There could be no garden of his choosing, of the apple tree, the singing, and the gold, in the words of that lovely Greek chorus. No achievable Elysium in life, or lasting haven of happiness, for any man with a sense of beauty. Nothing which could compare with the captured loveliness in a work of art, set down forever, so that to look on it or read was always to have the same precious sense of exaltation and restful inebriety. Life, no doubt, had moments with that quality of beauty, of unbidden flying rapture, but the trouble was, they lasted no longer than the span of a cloud's flight over the sun. Impossible to keep them with you. as art caught beauty and held it fast. They were fleeting as one of the glimmering or golden visions one had of the soul in nature, glimpses of its remote and brooding spirit. Here, with the hot sun on his face, a cuckoo calling from a thorn tree, and in the air the honey savour of gorse, here among the little fronds of the young fern, the starry blackthorn, while the bright clouds drifted by high above the hills and dreamy valleys, here and now was such a glimpse. But in a moment it would pass, as the face of Pan, which looks round the corner of a rock, vanishes at your stare. And suddenly he sat up. Surely there was something familiar about this view, this bit of common, that ribbon of road, the old wall behind him. While they were driving, he'd not been taking notice, never did, thinking of far things or of nothing. But now he saw. 26 years ago, just at this time of year, from the farmhouse within half a mile of this very spot, he had started for that day in Torquay, whence it might be said he had never returned. And a sudden ache beset his heart. He had stumbled on just one of those past moments in his life, whose beauty and rapture he had failed to arrest, whose wings had fluttered away into the unknown. He had stumbled on a buried memory, a wild, sweet time, swiftly choked and ended. And turning on his face, he rested his chin on his hands and stared at the short grass where the little blue milkwort was growing. And this is what he remembered.